So thank you, Ms. Chairman. Today I will talk about the 3D video disparity scaling for viewer preference and also the prevention of the discomfort. And I, one thing I should mention is that although I put a video in the title, so far we haven't used any video in the algorithm, so we will do it in the future. So this is our task list. So the motivation of this works. Obviously, we want to make a good trade-off between the depth quality and the viewer's comfort. So as we all know that for the current 3D display, it's quite different from the natural 3D world. There's a conflict between convergence and accommodation. So as a result, if we increase the 3D depth on the display, people may have a better or stronger 3D feeling, but at the same time, this stronger 3D feeling may trigger the discomfort for some viewers. And Hollywood makes a lot of effort to try to balance the depth quality and the comfort. So they have a depth budget. So they carefully manage the, how to put the depth on each frame, on each scene. And also the Hollywood movies optimized for the theater environment. But when the movies comes to the home or that there are some unprofessional 3D videos are coming, then it is very hard for content providers to really master the 3D depth for each screen in the home or in the hand. Here I show the three plots of the comfort zone of the three different devices. So the most left one is the handheld device, a 3D device, and the middle one is the 65-inch 3D TV, and the right one is the theater. So you can see that the comfort zones are quite different from device to device. So it is very hard for content providers actually to optimize their contents over all these varieties. So it's up to the TV makers like Sharp to put some algorithm to make this trade-off better. And of course, as a second motivation that we have an individual preference. For example, some people may like the stage style, which means that all the scenes behind the display screen, or maybe other people like a hologram style, that they like the objects are protruding from the screen. So it is better for basically 3D TV remote have some adjustment knob, just like a color adjustment knob, so that for each individual viewers, they can adjust their preference according to their the viewing conditions, also the probably their physical conditions of their eyes. So. With that motivation, here I show the overall block diagram of the algorithm. So it has five major modules. So we have a human visual system 3D model, which takes in the display conditions and the viewing conditions, and outputs the disparities in the input pairs and also output the best disparity range for that particular pair. And we have a disparity estimation to estimate the disparity. We have the occlusion detection to detect the occlusion, also derive the disparities for occluded pixels. And then with this kind of information, we can do the disparity adjustment to generate the disparity for that particular new view we want to generate. And then based on the disparity, disparity method of the new view, we can generate the, synthesize a new view. And the synthesize a new view compared with one of the input image to construct a new 3D view. 3D pairs, and these new 3D pairs have a different disparity than the input pairs. So I will first talk about the HBS 3D model. So here is the GUI between the this model. So it takes into the parameters of the displays, like display size, resolution. Also, it takes in the viewing conditions, the viewing distance, the viewer's inter-pupil distance, and also the visual blur distance. And the output of this model currently is pretty simple. It's the possible zone of comfort. Basically, it's a triangle, and it's scaled up and down by these parameters. Also, some portions will be chopped off. Here is the one output for the display of 46-inch and full HD resolution. And here is the green zone is a comfort zone, and the x-axis is the distance of the distance to the screen, and the y-axis is the disparity in pixels, counted in pixels. So with this comfort zone, we can predict that for income image pair, so how this image, how comfortable or uncomfortable of this image. This is basically the histogram of the that disparity of the input pair. And also we can tell which particular pixels are not comfortable or generate problems, like this red region is basically a problematic region that has a large, too large disparity. So now I will talk about the disparity estimation module in the algorithm. So disparity estimation is one of the oldest, probably unsolved computer vision problems. So the reason for is, of the difficulties is that there are some causes of ambiguities. So the very first one is the occlusions. Of course, for the 3D, there's always occlusions, like this region. So this part actually only appears in red image, not on the left image. And also the featureless regions, like the two. And for these two, although there's horizontal edges, but there's no vertical edges. For the disparity estimation, the vertical features are more important than the horizontal features. And also the regions with repetitive features, like three here. If you look at the one pixel, actually you try to find the best match on the right image, and you can find multiple ones, so which means it's very hard for algorithm to determine which one is the ground truth, is the truth. And also another cause is the small objects, like these small flowers, and with the large disparities. So disparity is larger than the object size. And another factor is the variation on the intensity and the colors. This may be due to the basically the imperfect lens and the image sensors, but also it may cause by the different lighting condition, because these two sensors are at different positions. So one widely used remedy is just to use a correlation in the enabling disparity vectors. And so we need a base, construct a cost function. The first one is for the difference between two windows in the left image and the right image. And the second term is the disparity difference. Basically, you just look at the current disparity and its neighbor's disparities. So depending on the how many disparity vectors that one cost function can generate, there are three categories of the methods. So first one is that each cost function can only generate one disparity. And the example is regularized block matching. And the second category is that basically for one cost function, it can generate one scanning line of disparity vectors. So the example is dynamic programming. And the third one is most complicated one, and basically For the whole image, whole frame, there's only one cost function. So you solve this, optimize this cost function, you got all the disparities of the whole image. And so the solution usually is based on the graph theory, like a mean cut and max flow. In terms of the results, so the first one is local optimal, a second one is semi-global optimal, and third one is global optimal. But the computational cost also just reversed, and this one is very expensive. So judging from the performance and also the computational cost and also the flexibility. Flexibility means that how easy we can modify the parameters and change the add new components to the algorithm. So probably we'll focus on this one. We use our algorithm is based on the regularized block matching. Then we bring in a new improvement. It's a weighting mechanism to select the pixels in both windows in these two terms. So the weighting mechanism is very similar to the weighting mechanism of the bilateral filter. And the weight is bigger when the intensity difference of a pixel with the center pixel is smaller. So I won't go to the detail of the bilateral filter. So weighting mechanism. And so there are some benefits of using this weighting mechanism. So it can basically allow the algorithm to use a bigger window. In that sense, actually, it can help with reducing the ambiguities of the two, three, four listed in the previous slide. And also, it can have a faster converging speed. So here I show a very simple case. So this is a left image and a right image. It has a foreground bar and a background circle. So right now I will try to find out the disparity of this center pixel, so of the front object basically. So if we use the regular window, so if the window is like this size, and then if I try to find the best match on the right image, I have two choices. One is basically centered over here, so that's one candidate. Another is centered here. But because in these windows, the background is very strong, so probably it will end up here. So the center of the window, this pixel actually has a disparity of the background, not the foreground. So by using the weighting mechanism, actually, because of the selecting power of the weighting mechanism, when we construct the window in the left image, actually, already remove all the background pixels. So then, based on this window and the pixels, actually, it's pretty easy to find the right disparities. So here is the overall block diagram of the motion estimation algorithm. So it is an iterative multi-resolution algorithm. So from iteration to iteration, we can change the resolution, we can change the window size of the two windows, and also the search range and the search depth. And we found actually the performance quite depends on how we choose these parameters. The next module I will discuss is occlusion detection. So we think the occlusion detection is very important. There are two reasons. One is most artifacts in the synthesized views can be traced back to the improper handling of the occlusions. And the second reason, if you think carefully, if we detect occlusion, actually we already separate the foreground and the background objects. Basically, we already understand the meaning of the disparity maps. So there are many ways of detection of the occlusions. And one way is to use one side disparity. And we feel it's not very reliable, and especially if we only use the matching error as a cue. So we propose here is actually we use both side disparity maps. And particularly when we detect occlusion in the left image, we use the rising edge in the red disparity map. You use two information. One is its position, and the other is its height. And here, the figure show illustrates how it works. Basically, still the simple scenario. We have a foreground object and a background object. And their occlusion is here. So this is the left image, and this is the right image. So in ideal case, in theory, that the disparity map of the left image should look like this. So this is the occlusion region. And the occlusion region is in the background. So it should have the same disparity as the background. So this basically is flat. Then there's a falling edge. But in practice, actually, because the occlusion region doesn't have a match in the right image, so this region, occlusion region, basically is sort of arbitrary, can be anything. So from detection point of view, this region, there's no features, basically it can be any features or any other. But if you look at the right disparity map, actually it comes with a very sharp edge. And also the height of this edge is same as this width of this occlusion region. So we use this as sort of leading cues to do the detection. We also use other cues like the matching errors or any other lot of cues I won't mention here. So here is the last two modules of this algorithm. So it's a disparity adjustment and new view synthesis. So the disparity adjustment module generates the disparity map for the new view by scaling the two maps. And because of the grid change, there are some small holes, which is just about 1 pixel size wide. And these small holes can be easily filled by a low-pass filtering. And for the big holes, typically they're generated by the occlusion miss occlusion detection. So if this part works well, it shouldn't have a big holes. If there's a big holes, actually we fill it in the disparity map in here, not in the synthesis part, not in the intensity image. So by doing that, we try to avoid to generate blurred image. So here is just show a very quick, I think this image showed in the last presentation. So this is the input and image. Previously, this is a, let's see. Yeah, this is a left image. This is right image. So the red ball has a very big disparities. So here is that if we don't handle the occlusion very carefully, then we can see there are a lot of distortions in the occlusion region. So here is the basically, if we bring in the new improvements of the algorithm, so we can see that this part probably is more correct than the previous one. But you notice actually the ball is not very circle. So now it's a summary and discussions. So we describe a 3D scaling, disparity scaling algorithm. So it has a HVS model to predict the scaling. And also we have put a new improvement in the motion estimation, disparity estimation algorithm. And we also have a novel, sort of novel occlusion detection algorithm. And we found actually the performance of this car, at least for this algorithm, is still not very, very stable. It's sort of a content dependent. So for some content it works well, and for some content it just doesn't work so well. And it seems to me, at least, it's very hard to hide artifacts. So artifacts are always there. And there are many ways to handle, to hide artifacts for the 2D synthesized image in the literature, but not many for the 3D. And also, one thing we may think of is that we blur the synthesized image, but we found there is a sort of a dominant eye effect. So some people just have a left eye is sharper than the right eye, and the other is the right eye is sharper than the left eye. So it's very difficult to just choose which one you should blur. And finally, that's, if someone is interested to find a job, we have some opening in the SLA. Thank you.
We do have time for a couple questions. There's one way over there. He's got his hand up.
Hi. One other particular problematic item in depth estimation is transparent or partially transparent objects. Does your algorithm handle those type of objects?
No, not well for those kind of scenario that semi-transparent. Also, there are another things, a sort of a fence. Basically, you have a sort of fence in the front and also some background. That's also pretty difficult for this one to handle.
Any other quick question? Marty?
Maybe it's kind of the best thing we have is Percival's zone of comfort, but I just want to point out that that thing came from fitting patients with spectacles back in the 1920s. And yeah, it causes avergence accommodation conflict, but it's quite different from what you're doing in stereo viewing, because when you're fitting someone with glasses, you're changing the overall power of their eye constantly, right? It's a constant offset.
Yeah.
Whereas with stereo viewing, the content's moving all over the place. So we're, you know, unfortunately, maybe it's the best we've got at the moment, but it's not necessarily what actually defines the zone of comfort for stereo viewing, because it's different.
Yeah, I think that's very correct. So this model actually is very, very rough, and we just use a very, very rough model to basically, we don't expect that actually it can really predict very, very well, basically. Just to sort of give us a sort of sense. It's not really give us sort of very accurate numbers. So that's our starting point.
Thank you. We'll cut off the questions now.